Thank you very much. I was just remarking on how strange, how interestingly strange it is that this podium faces the door when here are all you people around here. However, I'll keep twitching around so as to include everybody. It's a real pleasure to be here in this otherwise very beautiful room and interestingly arranged room. I was told, it's so right here somewhere, Miss Brooks will be participating in a program with other women poets celebrating Emily Dickinson. And it certainly is my pride to be anywhere in the neighborhood of Adrienne Rich. I understand that possibly Audre Lorde might be coming. Maxine Kuhlman has already been here. Is she here now? Uh-huh. Well, I'm really proud to be included in such company. And my mother's name was Keziah. Keziah. I always wished that she had named me Keziah instead of Gwendolyn, which is such a fancy sounding name. I named my daughter Nora, N-O-R-A, simple and clean and direct, easy and quick to say. Well, I'm going to be reading, tell you exactly what I'm going to be reading, and I'm to stop by maybe 5 minutes to eight. Is it 5 minutes to eight or 10 minutes to eight that I should stop? That Adrienne Rich is going to come on. All right. I'm going to read 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 woman-oriented poems. Then, I'm afraid, I'm going to mention a boy, and then seven boys, and then all of us, and then I'll be closing with a poem addressed to young people in general. Well, first woman-oriented poem I want to read, or at least it was written by a woman, a little woman of 12, not myself. Aurelia Davidson entered this poem in my Illinois Poet Laureate competition in Chicago, in Illinois. It's for everybody in Illinois. And I had to give this poem a prize because I felt it was such a clear note of warmth-oriented and honesty-oriented poetry. She called her poem Trapped. I am trapped because I am black. Let me out, I say. But the white man say no. I turn, but who am I? I walk, but who am I? I am a little black girl trapped, but will I get out? Yes, I say. I look, I learn, and I sing, and I dance, and out I come from the past. I would like to think that all of our little black women would subscribe to that. And I told Aurelia, I wish I had written that poem. So I thought it was a good way to begin my little part of this session. And I have my next offering called Essential Black Women, and I was asked to write a little poetic introduction to a calendar celebrating black women. And I wrote this to precede a poem that I had already written called To Black Women, which I'll read right after this prosy part. Look at these women. They are clean-willed. They are adventurous. They are warm of heart and clear of spirit. They are reasonable. They are sane. they subscribe to the beauty and nurturing potential of Black family. And by Black family, I mean our entire range of categories. South Africa, the little babe just born in the South Bronx. These Black women love us. They are not trying to wriggle out of our race. They do not decry nor revile new roads. They approve new roads of discovery, discovery founded on and referential to the nourishment of our past. And they understand that if we do not work with and warrant our Black men, we are lost. These women know we cannot go into battle alone, no matter how muscular our weapons and our wit. They know we must review and respectfully remodel and extend our Black men. These Black women salute all that is rich and right and civil within us, and I salute them in my poem to Black women. Sisters, where there is cold silence, no hallelujahs, no hurrahs at all, no handshakes, no neon red or blue, no smiling faces, prevail. Prevail across the editors of the world who are obsessed, self-honeying, and self-crowned in this seduced arena. It has been a hard trudge with fainting, bandaging, and death. There have been startling confrontations. There have been tramplings, tramplings of monarchs and of other men. But there remain large countries in your eyes. Shrewd sun, the civil ballad, the listening secrets, and you create and train your flowers still. Thinking about Emily Dickinson, as I made up my little list of poems to read, I said, you know, this is almost hopeless because Emily and I are absolutely different. In the details of our lives. And I think I would like to tell you how I met Emily. We had been having for many years in our textbooks in the various schools I went to selections of Emily Dickinson's work. And I rarely cared for them. But when I was 19, I went to the junior college library and found a collection of her work, and work that had been discovered by that time. And I was absolutely enchanted, and I began to really appreciate her way with common words and her way of putting common words together so that they made new magic. But what would Emily have made out of the late 60s in which I found such help, lots of mistakes and clumsinesses, but a lot of help too. And that helped form what I am today. So I just said, well, I will just come there and offer them what I have to give. And if it is not a million, well, that's unfortunate or fortunate. If you don't mind, I'm going to take off this jacket because for some reason it's quite warm up here. Okay, let's see what comes next. I decided to read The Mother. People have been playing with this poem for decades because it was first published in 45, and some strange things have been said about it. And of course, after people have read it or listened to it, they are positive, especially the critics who wear crowns. They are positive. They know exactly how I feel on the subject of this controversy, because I should tell you, those of you who do not know this poem, that the first word in it is abortion. And it's called, it has been referred to so often as her abortion poem. I believe that in here is a little catalog of the qualities of motherhood. And of course, you're free to take anything else from it that you need to use. That's one of the richnesses of poetry, that we take from the poems we read what we need. The mother, abortions will not let you forget. You remember the children you got that you did not get. The damn smallpox with a little or with no hair. The singers and workers that never handled the air. You will never neglect or beat them, or silence or buy with a sweet. You will never wind up the sucking thumb or scuttle off ghosts that come. You will never lend them controlling your luscious sigh. Return for a snack of them with godly mother eye. I have heard in the voices of the wind, the voices of my dim killed children. I have contracted, I have eased my dim dears at the breast they could never suck. I have said, sweets, if I sinned, if I seized your luck and your lives from your unfinished breach, if I stole your births and your names, your strength, baby tears, and your games, your stilted or lovely loves, your tumults, your marriages, aches, and your deaths. If I poison the beginnings of your breath, believe that even in my deliberateness I was not deliberate. So why should I whine? Whine that the crime was other than mine, since anyhow you are dead, or rather, or instead, you were never made. But that too, I am afraid, is faulty. What shall I say? How is the truth to be said? You were born, you had body, you died. It is just that you never giggled, or planned, or cried. Believe me, I loved you all. Believe me, I knew you so faintly. And I loved you all. And one of the passages that I particularly appreciate about this poem is this little catalog of things that mothers do. Most mothers love their children.
Most mothers love you too.
But no matter how much you love your children, you want to get away from them sometimes. You want to go downtown, have lunch with a friend, look in a store window, go to a disco, have fun and be by yourself, essentially. But at a certain time in the experience, you are almost bound, I think, to have an urgent interest in getting back to those children. So that's why I said, return for a snack of them with gobbling mother eye. I'm not going to read. There are some men here, aren't there? Yes. Are there some black men here? Any black men here? In your honor, black man, I am not going to read Ballad of Pearl May Lee tonight. Black men have really been getting a pounding of late, and there have been features on TV directed at their villainy, their lacks, their losses, their lunacy. And I've just decided not to add to it tonight. I want to say that I had a wonderful black father, and I grew up on a street of wonderful black families where the fathers worked and then came home and had dinner. I hope this doesn't sound absolutely remarkable to you, but my father would come home and have dinner at about 6 o'clock, and we would sit down at the table, my brother, my mother, my father, and I, and we would talk about what had happened during the day. And my father had the sweetest smile and the warmest, deep voice that I have ever heard. And after dinner, he might recite poetry to us, or we might group around. You read the papers today, I know you're not going to believe this. Group around my mother, who would play the piano, while the rest of us sang. And she sang, too, in her lovely soprano voice. It was a very happy black household, very rich black family life that I came from, and I'm happy to salute it. I'm going to read now a poem called, well, it's a sonnet in a series called The Children of the Poor, 5 sonnets in that series, and I'm just going to read the 4th one, the one that has resulted in many people considering me the Ma Barker of the late 60s. Anybody who knows anything about the late 60s in Chicago knows that is such a strange assumption. But this poem has frequently been called millet. Millet. That is a word that covers a variety of virtues and villainies, I suppose. First bite, then fiddle. Ply the slipping string with feathery sorcery. Muzzle the note with hurting love. The music that they wrote, bewitch, bewilder. Qualify to sing thread-wise. Devise no song, no hempen thing for the dear instrument to bear. Devote the bow to silks and honey. Be remote a while from malice and from murdering. But first, to arms, to armor. Carry hate in front of you and harmony behind. Be deaf to music and to beauty blind. Win war, rise bloody, maybe not too late. For having first to civilize a space wherein to play your violin with grace. Now that's my heroine, Annie Allen, thinking about her children and wondering what she can do to validate them, to send them out into the world enweaponed. Of course, that's a bad word to use, but enweaponed. And of course, probably going to do what my mother did, take her children to the Art Institute and see that they have piano lessons. My mother saw that I had piano lessons until I had passed the 3rd year, and she could tell that not much was going to come of it, and she let me go. But still, there is that wonderment about how much any of this is doing to strengthen children. Thought I would read a nice, happy, woman-oriented poem. All of these things seem to, well, not all, to black women might have been an exception, but the others do seem to speak for not just the woman, but for the whole family unit. Or, in this case, for a couple. It's a familiar poem to those of you who have been listening to me read over the decades, when you have forgotten Sunday, the love story. I guess there's still love in the world. Young people listening to me reading this poem start snickering, and they put their hands up to, not everybody, but some of them. They do like this. Listen to that old woman up there talking about love, romantic love. She knows that's all in the past. Well, I must have been involved with that magic entity at some time in my life, or I wouldn't have a son 45 and a daughter 34. And when you have forgotten the bright bedclothes on a Wednesday and a Saturday, and most especially when you have forgotten Sunday, when you have forgotten Sunday has in bed, or me, sitting on the front room radiator in the limping afternoon, looking off down the long street to nowhere, hugged by my plain old wrapper of no expectation and nothing I have to do, and I'm happy, why? And if Monday never had to come, when you have forgotten that, I say, and how you swore if somebody beat the bell, and how my heart played hopscotch if the telephone rang, and how we finally went into Sunday dinner, that is to say, went across the front room floor to the ink-spotted table in the southwest corner, Sunday dinner, which was always chicken and noodles, or chicken and rice, and salad, and rye bread, and tea, and chocolate chip cookies, I say, when you have forgotten that, when you have forgotten my little presentiment that the war would be over before they got to you, and how we finally undressed and whipped out the light and flowed into bed and lay loose limb for a moment in the weekend, bright bedclothes, then gently folded into each other, when you have, I say, forgotten all that, then you may tell, then I may believe you have forgotten me. Well, I want to read you a poem called The Mere... Thank you very much. I want to read you a poem called The Near Johannesburg Boy, and the titling of this poem is strategic. This boy can't live in Johannesburg. I decided to write this poem when I found myself hearing on TV that little black children in South Africa were meeting in the road and saying to each other, "Have you been detained yet?" And I thought that was truly appalling. And it meant, I believe, that they are feeling now that being imprisoned is equivalent to playing ball or whatever games they're in, they have time for over there. So I decided to empathize with one of those young blacks, and I was really rewarded. Well, I don't know how some of you poets feel about being rewarded. It's not necessary. You don't have to be rewarded for writing a poem, but I was very pleased in a kind of grim way when I read this poem at the James Madison University just recently, And a young fellow from South Africa said that his brother was in prison waiting to be executed, and his father had been killed, and shortly after that his mother had died, and he was quite cheerful, as he said to me about the boy in this poem. I am that boy. My way is from woe to wonder, a black boy near Johannesburg, hot in the hot time. Those people do not like black among the colors. They do not like our calling our country ours. They say our country is not ours. Those people visiting the world as I visit the world, those people, their bleach is puckered and cruel. It is work to speak of my father. My father, his body was whole till they stopped it suddenly with a short shot. But before that, physically tall and among us, he died every day, every moment. My father, first was the crumpling. No, first was the fist and the fury. Last was the crumpling. It is a little used rag that is under. It is not my father. Gone down. About my mother. My mother was this loud laugher. Below the sunshine, below the starlight at festival. My mother is still this loud laugher. Still moving straight in the getting it done, as she names it. Oh, a strong eye is my mother, except when it seems we are lax in our looking. Well, enough of slum, enough of old story. Like a clean spear of fire, I am moving. I am not still. I am ready to be ready. I shall flail in the hot time. Tonight I walk with 100 of playmates to where the hurt black of our skin is forbidden. There in the dark that is our dark, there a pulse across earth that is our earth, there exulting. They're redeeming. They're roaring up. Oh, my father. We shall forge with the fist and the fury. We shall flail in the hot time. We shall. There's no punctuation at the end. We reel cool, the pool players, 7 at the golden shovel. We reel cool, we left school, we lure light, we strike straight, we sing sin, we then gin, we jazz June, we die soon. Poem's been banned here and there because... Infirm, I wrote, because somebody wrote to the library and asked that I find books with poems featuring handicapped people for a conference that was going to feature handicapped people. So I decided I would try to write such a poem myself. I have a certain way of feeling about handicapped people. I feel that we are all handicapped to some degree in some dimension. So under the title I wrote, For Handicapped All. Everybody here is infirm. Everybody here is infirm. Oh, mend me, Lord. Today I say to them, Lord, look, I am beautiful, beautiful with my wing that is wounded, my eye that is bonded, or my ear not funded, or my walk all a wobble, I'm enough to be beautiful. You are beautiful too. And I hope every last one of you believes that about yourself. Thank you. I'm going to read a poem called To the Young Who Want to Die. I saw a telefilm about a year ago. I'm sure many of you saw it too. It was much heralded, very nicely crafted, I thought. It was about a young couple in their late teens who loved each other very much. Nobody understood. Their parents didn't understand. Other elders didn't understand. So they decided to kill themselves so they could be together forever. And I hope I don't sound cruel or cold or mean. And I know that there are many varieties of reasons for this act. I'm not fitted to deal with this phenomenon. I'm not a psychiatrist. I felt, however, as I looked at that picture, such a waste. Their reasons didn't seem to have any quality at all. And I just like to say, this is preaching, of course, but I just like to say to young people who might be thinking about doing away with themselves, feeling that they're not important, that they have nothing to give, that they do have something to give, to stay here and smile. So I wrote out, well, I'm going to read this poem to you ultimately. People are always saying, why don't you just go ahead and read your poems? And don't talk about them so much. But you see, you can do that for yourselves. You can get a book and read what I've written. But I feel if you go to the trouble of inviting me out to be with you, that you ought to get a little something extra. And I am only too happy to provide. Well, I wrote this out as a kind of sauce for the poem, perhaps. In addition to other things I wanted to say about this, on this subject, say, you're going to die soon enough. And I wrote here, soon enough, you begin to notice the rapid passing of time. Especially when you get married and start a family. Certainly, those little children are not the same 2 days in a row. So about that time, I believe, many women become conscious of the fact that time really is moving. Suddenly, you observe your little quick-trotting mother begins to wobble and wane. Suddenly, your strong, strong father begins to gasp as he climbs a stair. Suddenly, an aunt disappears. Even a cousin begins to wrinkle, and an uncle crumbles before your very eyes. One day, you're gray. Another day, you're gone. That is the natural course of things. So what's the hurry? Stay here and help the rest of us with some smiling. I was at a hotel recently, and I sent down for room service, and a young waiter came up, and he looked rather tense. And I said, "Good morning." And he said, "Oh, thank you, thank you." Already life, early as it was in the morning, had begun to deal with him. And he was grateful for just a smile. So that is something that we can all do to make life different and bearable. To the young who want to die, sit down, inhale, exhale. The gun will wait. The light, the gas will wait. The tall gall in the small seductive vial will wait, will wait, will wait a week, will wait through April. You do not have to die this certain day. Death will abide, will pamper your postponement. I assure you, death will wait. Death has a lot of time. Death can attend to you tomorrow or next week. Death is just down the street, his most obliging neighbor can meet you any moment. You need not die today. Stay here through pout or pain or peskiness. Stay here, see what the news is going to be tomorrow. Graves grow no green that you can ever use. Remember, green, your color. You are spring. Now I'm going to close with, thank you. I'm going to close with a children's poem, and it's suitably called A Little Girl's Poem. And I'm sure that Emily would have felt this way if she had lived into this most challenging time. Life is for me and shiny. Inside me, I feel stars and sun and bells and singing. There are children in the world all around me and beyond me, here and beyond the big waters, here and in countries peculiar to me, but not peculiar to themselves. I want the children to live and to laugh. I want them to sit with their mothers and fathers and have happy cocoa together. I do not want fire screaming up to the sky. I do not want families killed in their doorways. Life is for us, for the children. Life is for mothers and fathers. Life is for the tall girls and boys in the high school on Henderson Street. It's for the people in African tents, the people in English cathedrals, the people in Indian courtyards, the people in cottages all over the world. Life is for us and shining. We have a right to sing. I feel we're all little girls and boys in that. Okay, thank you.